Herbert Jones from
Alabama.
Alabama. Yeah, they call him for short. It's H-E-R-B.
Yes.
Do they pronounce the H?
Yes. Yes.
So they go Herb for
Herb. Yes. Okay. I don't know anybody nicknamed Herb.
Yeah, I know, right?
But I
know the name.
I have some candidates, and none of them are named Herbert. And welcome to Highly Questionable. We got Israel the Tool Man Gutierrez, or the Tool Assistant, more accurately. And we got Dominique Foxworth in a tie-dye Jerry Garcia hoodie. There we go.
Let's I feel rock. Like I deserve the nickname.
You're Herb.
Today.
Is it fair to say that the Sweet 16 was a big letdown?
All right, Sweet 16, two in each game. That means we get eight games. Six of them were blowouts, right? We had a really good one with Alabama and UCLA, and I'm not even sure if it was good as much as it was close, but it provided us some measure of entertainment. And whether or not this was a letdown all depends on whether you got up in the first place. And I don't know about you, but I have had the damnedest time getting up for this thing, like watching this with no crowds, with this not being really good basketball to watch, where the women's tournament has definitely provided more entertainment on the court. No, I was not let down by the Sweet 16 as we've had it, but I look at this and I think about it. Yeah, it's a down year. Like, Duke wasn't in the tournament. Kentucky wasn't in the tournament. You could rattle those off. But would you really care if they were in the tournament? Like, did you really know anything about them? This has been a college basketball season with zero personality. We're not in it because the ball is good. We're in it for all the things that surround it. And we feels like we get none of the surrounding things. So you might have got let down. I didn't do it to myself in the first place.
I was pretty let down. I thought this could be sort of a rebound. Obviously, last year we didn't have the NCAA tournament. But to your point, Bo, I don't think we've felt college basketball fervor since Zion, right, a couple years ago. And so it hasn't. I picked Cade Cunningham versus Jalen Suggs in the final just to have two, you know, high-profile freshmen in there. And that's not obviously going to happen with Oklahoma State going down. But just as it pertains to this weekend, the blowouts so much don't really bother me. Obviously, you want the buzzer beaters. You want that excitement and everything else. But if it's a blowout out where the team plays well, or both teams play well, or, you know, the team that blows them out is just an exciting three-point shooting team, or you just can't stop them, kind of like Gonzaga, then I'd say, okay, at least I watch great basketball from one team. With this weekend, you had all the combined teams shooting less than 30% from three. Arkansas won a game against Oral Roberts shooting 1-for-9. It's like it's 1984 all over again. And so the games weren't necessarily good. And then the kicker to me, which just infuriates me when I watch college basketball, is the officiating. The first minute of UCLA-Alabama to me was ruined when Herb Jones got two fouls for offensive fouls, and that second one was clearly a block. And so that kind of ruined the game for them, even though they got to overtime and eventually lost. So to me, it was a huge letdown because it could have been more. These teams could have played well, and they just didn't.
Yeah, I think I'm more in the Bomani camp. I wasn't up for this season, but I do think that coronavirus has kind of stripped down, the whole pandemic has stripped down so many of these sports and kind of exposed them for what they are. And for me, college basketball hasn't been about the games in a long time, to be honest, because I'm not sure that I knew that before the tournament, but it was about all the other pageantry, sorry to use that word, but that's what got me excited about college basketball. The names on the front of the jerseys, honestly, is the reason why I tune in, with the exception of a guy like Zion, which is a once-in-a-lifetime type of person to come in and become a national star in just one season. Of course, he built on his social media following. But I realized that I like watching the tournament because of the buzzer beaters. I like watching the tournament because of the antics around it with the crowd. I like watching the tournament because it feels like a communal experience. And none of that feels like it's happening right now. We got three ones and a two still around, and you would think that's the best teams we could have. It would lead to the best basketball. But you pointed it out, Izzy, the basketball isn't even good. That UCLA game had a great finish with a guy who had no points all game hitting a big shot in that moment, and that was fun. They had some big dunks, big blocks, exciting, but it still wasn't enough for me to feel like I'm getting the full tournament experience. And I'm not sure that we can get the full tournament experience until we're back to normal, where Duke is in a tournament, Kentucky's in a tournament, there's a bunch of crazed fans and they're getting excited, and we have real buzzer beaters that we, it just doesn't feel like we've had as many of those on the men's side of the tournament, at least so far in the tournament.
Look, 30 years ago, this was the best players under 22 in the world in this tournament. Now, maybe a couple of them wind up being there. And I'm a little disappointed that Oral Roberts got put out, because they didn't stick around long enough for me to get on TV and get off some of these Oral Roberts jokes. Like, just imagine the coach coming over to the ref and being like, look, I don't want to put this all on your shoulders, but God say if we don't win this game, he gonna call us home.
Does the addition of Andre Drummond help the Lakers close the gap with the loaded Nets?
All right, so Andre Drummond got bought out of the $29.7 million he had left on his contract in Cleveland because they want to get young. Dominique football player, his eyes just got big. They're like, damn, I'd have to be Pat Mahomes to get that kind of money in the NFL. Anyway, how much he helps the Lakers is going to be very interesting because he does something very well that nobody cares about anymore. Rebounding. Like, there was a time when we would marvel at the kind of rebounding numbers that Andre Drummond puts up. People only care about those now if you're in the course of getting some sort of triple-double. But he's still a good player. LaMarcus Aldridge, on the other hand, do we know if he is actually good? Like, the Nets are doing the thing with him that's kind of similar with Blake Griffin. Yeah, you're getting older. Yeah, the last time we saw you, you stunk. But we don't think you actually stink. Like, they got a time machine in the back or something. I have no idea how much that's going to help, but the Lakers need a big to help them hold it down, if nothing else, while Anthony Davis is not there. And Drummond will help with that, on top of the fact that we've reached the point in our journey in the NBA where we've gotten so sophisticated that we've come to appreciate one of the most simple things about basketball. That big dude sets a hell of a screen. It matters.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the net side, like, you're right, it doesn't matter that they've added Aldridge or Griffin that much. I think the best case scenario is if their many scorers are having a cold night, maybe those guys can help them pull out a playoff win and there's one less playoff game that they have to play, but they don't need them. I do think it's different for LA and Drummond. While Drummond's not going to help them necessarily improve their standing in the West right now, he's not going to improve their scoring ability in the playoffs, he is going to help them when they play the Nuggets, which, in my view, they're shaping up to be a real legitimate contender out there. The Nuggets have a pretty big front and a talented front, from Jokic to Porter to adding Gordon now. I think that helps take some of the pressure off of AD and off of the Lakers' front court. So that, to me, seems more significant than Aldridge, let alone the rebounding. A competent, athletic, big body to be able to give problems to Jokic or Gordon or Michael Porter, any of that big front that Denver brings out there, I think that is real help for the Lakers going into the playoffs.
The buyout market cracks me up sometimes because the names are bigger than the actual production, right? Because Miami got Bielitsa, and he's going to be a better player than LaMarcus Aldridge, but hey, everybody's got LaMarcus Aldridge as a monster on the Nets. I mean, it's just not true. He's just not that good anymore, and it's not going to be a Blake Griffin situation where all of a sudden you're going to see him go back to the old LaMarcus Aldridge for stints. He's just struggling defensively, and unless you want a guy that's going to shoot a bunch of 15 to 18 footers as your primary big, it's probably not the greatest of additions. On the LA side, what's interesting to me is that, you know, they have a formula, right? They won last year with AD and LeBron, obviously, and then they played JaVale most of the time as the starting center. And even though it cracks me up to say out loud that Andre Drummond is the worst finisher at the rim in the NBA, crazy to think about. He's the worst finisher at the rim in the NBA. You can still go with that model of just trying to get as many offensive rebounds as you can if you're the Lakers. Because you want to slow the game down, because you don't want LeBron having to run at this crazy pace. And if you go with that theory, I think you can make that happen sometimes when you have a guy like Anthony Davis and LeBron around them. So I wouldn't say it's a complete waste to have that rebounding ability with this team, especially because, I mean, there were games last year where they just offensive rebounded you to death and they didn't even have Andre Drummond yet. So I think it can be helpful. I don't think it's anything that sort of puts them over the top as clearly the best team this year.
And you know what? Sometimes we can just simplify this and make it easy. Andre Drummond, better than Marc Gasol. Therefore, Lakers got better.
Right. Up next on HQ.
Whoever he gets right now, he better feel confident about the things that he can do. Because again, you don't give up that much capital unless you're going to win a Super Bowl. Not make the playoffs, not get to a championship game, not even get back to the Super Bowl. You got to win it.
Highly Questionable is brought to you by Pizza Hut. Order today at pizzahut.com. Would it be crazy if Kyle Shanahan drafted Mac Jones with the third pick?
All right, so Friday you saw where the 49ers traded the farm, like the farm, in order to move up to get the number three pick. but in some bizarre way they did it, but they're still going to start Jimmy Garoppolo. And I don't understand how you give up 3 first-round picks to move up to take a guy that's not going to start day one. That makes me think that you got fleeced. And then it gets more interesting because on Friday, Chris Sims, who you must remember has Kyle Shanahan's initials tattooed on his body, said that the 49ers, if they believe that they have a team that can win right now, the quarterback that puts you in the best position to win right now, that's not Trevor Lawrence, is Mac Jones. Did the 49ers really do all that to trade up to get a dude that in most of the mocks we're hearing about going in the teens? Did they really need to do all of that? I find that hard to believe. Now, I do believe that whenever your quarterback is there, you take your quarterback. That's why while I wouldn't have taken Daniel Jones, I didn't blame Dave Gettleman for taking him at 6, because if he's your guy, he's your guy. But he didn't trade 3 first-round picks in order to go up there and get a guy that he probably could have gotten later. I don't think this makes a whole lot of sense. And I thought that Kyle Shanahan had seen the light about needing more athletic guys at quarterback in the modern NFL, because Mac Jones seems the most like the old paradigm out of anybody that's available.
Yeah, well, if they do it, you better win a Super Bowl. That's the only way this all pans out. You better win a Super Bowl in Mac Jones's rookie contract window, the 4 years that until his contract starts to balloon. Because if not, then it wasn't worth it, in my view. I don't see what everyone else sees in Mac Jones, why he's climbing up, and I don't see what reportedly Kyle Shanahan may see in Mac Jones that's going to make him better than these other guys. Like, it feels to me like Justin Fields is the obvious selection. And I understand that Kyle Shanahan is like one of the true, actual, legitimate quarterback whisperers. If we have a quarterback whisperer in the NFL, it's him, because everyone has their best season with him. And it's different type of quarterbacks, from RG3 to Matt Ryan to whoever they put in there. All those times when Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt, he put together good performances for those guys. And when you watch his play design and his setup, they're going to be wide open people that you can throw the ball to, which is why, for the life of me, I can't understand why you wouldn't go with Justin Fields, because Justin Fields is accurate. Justin Fields has a strong arm. He can make all the wide open throws that you're going to create. But the difference between Justin Fields and some of these other guys is that Justin Fields, in my view, can make more happen. He holds onto the ball for a little while too long, but they have a great offensive line. I think he fits better than anyone else. And this idea that somehow Mac Jones is the most sure thing coming out, even though he's only played for one season, like he has as many starts as Trey Lance, just about, against better competition. But still, like, the leap to that Mac Jones is somehow more pro-ready than Justin Fields, to me, just doesn't make sense, especially when the pro game looks the way that it looks now. Nothing about this suggests Mac Jones over Justin Fields, but I don't know. I'm sitting in a box talking on TV. I've never coached in the Super Bowl, so maybe I'm wrong.
I saw a list that said you're the number one NFL analyst in the country, so I think you have some knowledge there. But look, I'm always skeptical of these quarterbacks that sort of jump up the rankings late in the situation, right? Late in the draft process, because you think it's just teams getting desperate. And everything that you just said, Dominique, about the qualities of these other quarterbacks is true, whereas Mac Jones is not like number one in any of those things, even accuracy, if that's the direction you want to go with this. And, you know, you want to talk about like sort of revisionist history and people saying, hey, well, maybe Tua Tagovailoa shouldn't have been as high a pick because his accuracy numbers were you know, skewed because he had such great receivers and they were open all the time. Well, Mac Jones has two guys that's probably going to get picked in the top 15, and that's probably low. They should both get picked in the top 10 in that draft. And so what do we think about that? Is he throwing to wide open guys all the time? Is that what makes him better? I'm totally confused by all of this. And the most confusing part is, hey, we're not even going to start this guy. We're going to stick with Jimmy, when I think everybody in the world will say, you know what, if you're going to make this leap, just go ahead and make the leap, because nobody has that kind of faith left in Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yo, but Dominique, you make a good point about Shanahan being the quarterback whisperer, but is he the quarterback evaluator? I will say this until this dude wins a Super Bowl. He's the man who looked at Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes and was like, nope, we're going to take a defensive lineman. Why? Because we can sign Kirk Cousins, all right? That is all we really know about him as quarterback evaluator. He's the guy that decided to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo after he realized he was not going to get Kirk Cousins. I have no idea if he knows what the hell he's looking at when he has to pick the quarterback himself. He can get the most out of the one that he stuck with, but I don't know if he has any idea how to get the one you need.
That's an excellent point. I think that's one of the challenges of being one of these coaches that are highly sought after, is he has a lot of influence in the front office. John Lynch went from doing what I'm doing now to being the general manager, in part because Kyle Shanahan knows that John Lynch is going to get the guys that he tells him to get. So I think you're right. John Lynch is the general manager, but Kyle Shanahan is making this choice. And whoever he gets right now, he better feel confident about the things that he can do, because again, you don't give up that much capital unless you're going to win a Super Bowl, not make the playoffs, not get to a championship game, not even get back to the Super Bowl. You got to win it.
What font do you think Chris Sims used for that tattoo? You had to go like Old English, right? That's the one you go with.
That would be like the most ironic thing in the world if he went Old English.
Do you question which of these football players is more exciting?
Okay, so for our first clip, we are going to a football game involving Arizona Christian University, which both exists and is playing football in March. Here we go. All right, you see that kicker? Get a look at that. He is in the media guide at 5'5", 285. His name is Nestor Higuera, which is to say, yes, you have seen a 5'5", 285-pound Mexican football player. That has happened. You've lived that long.
That is outstanding. And it was a clutch kick. Like, that was to win their conference tournament also. So I know we're supposed to be comparing this to some other play, but it's no way that you beat this 5'5", enormous, game-winning, conference-winning kick.
I mean, I like that Dominique went with enormous kick. But I want to see the next play.
All right. Now, the next play is from a game involving Weber State University, which I did not know had a football team and is also playing in March. They're playing Northern Arizona because they say that on the bottom of the screen. Here we go.
Oh, hook and ladder.
That's right. I
mean, you ever run a hook and ladder to an offensive lineman?
Big man got moves. See, the thing about them lower-level offensive linemen is they ain't even necessarily that big. You know what I'm saying? So you get a little more agility out of them.
Harold the Show Arsenault is the only thing I will ever remember about Weber State. That guy had no neck, but he could play some basketball.
That poor guy, he had his touchdown, his big moment, and he got matched up against my man kicking the field goal. Because that, I mean, that might have gotten me excited if I didn't just watch a man the same size win the whole conference with his foot.
Do you question what's sadder, the U.S. men's national team not qualifying for the Olympics or the gold that clinched it?
Well, continuing a long tradition of men embarrassing their female counterparts, the U.S. men's national team will not be competing in the upcoming Olympics. They lost a match to Honduras that would have gotten them in. And now let's watch how they lost that match. Oh.
Oh, man.
Oh, no. Are you serious?
We have to throw this onto the montage, of course, because that's one of the most embarrassing goals I've ever seen in international play. They were already down 1-0 and then give up that nonsense goal. I thought the younger generation of soccer players were supposed to be better. Weren't we supposed to like be super depressed about not making the World Cup? But don't worry, because the young ones are coming up and the under 23 group didn't even make the Olympics. What is going on here?
What was he even trying to do?
He was trying to pass it to the right back, I think.
Yeah, but like, don't normally the goalkeepers like wait till it's all clear? Like, can't he pick it up?
I think he tried to nutmeg the dude. I think he tried to nutmeg the defender.
The defender passed it back to him, so I don't think you can pick it up when the defender passes it back to you, but you can also not kick it at the offensive player right in front of your face. Like, that is the most embarrassing part. The U.S. men's national team hasn't made the Olympics in the last three tries, so that should not surprise any of us that they missed it again. But missing it like that is embarrassing, and the worst thing about all of this is they messing up people's money. Like, they are messing up all the Olympics money. Who doesn't want the richest country in the world to have people care about what's happening in the Olympics? And they are ruining it once again, somehow still getting paid the same as the women.
Well, I still have to say, though, that while there's potential that goalkeeper messed up everybody else's money, when I see a play like that, I wonder about his own.
Starting tonight, the men's and women's Elite Eight.
All right, I want to take a moment to point out that Baylor and UConn are playing in the Elite Eight, two big names in women's basketball. Be sure to check that one out. And also want to take a moment to point out that we have three teams playing tonight from the old Southwest Conference, which was never worth a damn at basketball. But welcome to 2021. Anyway, let's look at the end of Arkansas Oral Roberts. It's kind of a local game. Tulsa close to Arkansas. Dun, 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 dun. There we go. Arkansas. 2.9 seconds left. Oral Roberts wanted to go huddle up, ask for some assistance because they knew what might happen if they did not win. They lose more than the game. Now, for Oral Roberts' attempt at a buzzer beater. There we go. Oh, man.
Thought that one was good.
Coach on the sideline getting his paperwork right. Might be time to go home.
I don't think they got paperwork. I mean, I don't know. I haven't been there, but
No. I mean the paperwork, like, you know, make sure your kids is all right. Like down the line of paperwork.
Oh, got you. Yeah, that's a good point.
Hey man, it's consequences for not meeting the goal at Oral Roberts, from what I've been told. Izzy, are you intrigued?
Very much so. The women's tournament has been more entertaining than the men's one so far. But in terms of predictions, I know people want to hear men's predictions. I've got three number one seeds advancing to the Final Four. And then I've got Oregon State beating Houston, because in a close game, they're going to pull that one out. So three number ones and a number 12.
Dominique, we're intrigued.
I'm not all that intrigued, but I'm not sure. I didn't know we had to come here and give predictions. Like, I don't know. Let's flip a coin. I can tell you who's going to win. Who got the lower number? Pick them.
All right, that is our show. Find Izzy Gutierrez in a weight room near you. Find Dominique Foxworth all over television. Izzy will be working harder, I assure you.
I got a podcast, too. You know, tell people about that.
Foxworth Fridays on the right time with Bomani Jones. Wait a minute, yeah. You got a what?
You heard me.